Yeah, that Eric Hunter guy is such a weirdo.
Yeah, what a freak.
What a freaking freak.
Ugh.
You couldn't get any freakier with an electrified freaking machine set to maximum freak.
He defines the word freak.
He defreaks the word freak.
Freaky.
No, I'm sorry, that was too far. That was silly.
That's, yeah, it's come on.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 14 of One More Podcastle, a podcast about digital entertainment and not about architecture. My name is Eric Bailey. I hope I don't have a heart attack tonight, and I'm the editor-in-chief of OneMoreCastle.com.
I am Eric Hunter. I am the audio engineer, and I am but a leaf on the wind again.
My name's Jason Lamb. I'm the resident Canadian. And in the off chance he does have a heart attack, I'll perform open heart surgery.
With a ballpoint pen.
Yes.
Underwater.
It's choice.
Does the color of ink matter for the ballpoint pen?
It's best not to use red.
That makes
sense.
That
would be confusing.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. You get a little confused. Yeah. Other than that, anything's good. Nice black or blue.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hello.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Doing well. I finally... Finally unboxed all of my games. They are officially out of boxes.
Like, whoa.
Yes.
Were they sealed?
No. Oh, okay. So I've basically moved every year since I was 18, and I'm 27 now. And yeah, so when I moved, I just put all my games in boxes, and then I marked the boxes as, you know, these are my NES games, these are my Super NES games. And so bought the house a couple of months ago.
I was going to say.
Finally bought some shelving for the basement room, which is now the man cave, and was finally able to officially unbox all of my video games. And I've been cataloging all of them. I haven't gotten to my handheld games yet or my Nintendo 64 games, but I currently have 425 games. Super
games.
Excited. Super excited.
It's always good to have a lot of games.
I bought more today. I bought like five more today.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that you've clearly unboxed the best part of your home living experience now.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So do you move every year? Like, it just happens to work out that way? Or do you genuinely like moving and going to new places?
I hate moving. Moving is the absolute worst for me. The first time that I moved, obviously, was out of the parents' house into an apartment with a friend of mine. Didn't really work out, so I moved out of that apartment to a townhouse with three other guys that were friends of mine. That didn't really work out. Moved out to another apartment with the same friend the first time. That worked out, but ended up getting into a relationship. Her and I got together, moved into a place. We separated. We moved out. I moved back in with my buddy. We moved to another townhouse with another guy. Then me and the girlfriend got back together. We moved back in together. Then we decided to buy a house in Ohio. Couldn't find a house in time, so we moved into another apartment together. We're there for about a year or two, and then we bought a house, finally, and then we moved yet again.
You will have to forgive me if I don't remember all the details you just gave us.
That was... Wow.
The important thing is the video games are out.
Nice.
And they look amen.
Glorious.
That's the important thing.
I'm looking, once I finally get my 64 games and everything set up, I'm going to do a huge blog entry on my website about just the whole unboxing and pictures and everything. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
That sounds like a story worth telling. I look forward to it. Have you had any time to play any of those old games?
Yeah, actually, I have.
Oh, what have you been playing?
I played a game called Out to Lunch for the Super NES. Out to Lunch.
Out to Lunch. Not familiar.
No, it's so the game, you play as a chef. It's your objective to capture all of the food that has run amok out of your fridge in different parts of the world. So you start off in Switzerland, and it's kind of like a...
Are you the Swedish chef from Muppets with talking food?
Not really. They don't talk, but they do have eyeballs, and they walk around like they know what's going on.
Sounds like the prequel to Captain Novalin.
That I have not ever heard of.
Long story short, It taught kids how to take care of their diabetes because it was a platformer in which you avoided some kinds of food and ate other kinds of food.
Interesting. Well, the thing that gets, so you get like a net to catch the food, and then you have to take the food to a barred kind of cell area so they don't move around, and you got to catch all the food to move on to the next level. And then there's another chef who wears all black, and he is, I guess, like your arch enemy, because he goes and he unlocks the cage, and then all the food can run amok. The thing that really doesn't make any sense for me is the beginning of every level, you see him walking into the kitchen, and it's all dark out, the lights are out, and he opens the fridge door, and then all the food comes like running and busting through, and the chef goes running at it. I mean, after the first time, wouldn't you think you'd just lock it? Just
you
lock
would
the
think
fridge.
So, yeah.
The game's okay. It's the controls real slippery. So it's like you're constantly on ice. Then you're like trying to jump on different platforms, and then you run too fast. And when you jump and hit the topmost platform, you just slide right off because you can't compensate in time. Not recommended. Not recommended.
I will say it sounds like you just solved the problem of obesity. We should just make everyone use a net to catch their food.
It's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, I think that would be great exercise. Maybe that's why he lets them out of the fridge every night. It's just an elaborate workout routine.
Well, then that's a terrible idea for a video game.
I'll give you that. Jason, what have you been playing?
What have I been playing this week? I've been playing a retro game and a not retro, but yet still old game.
Those don't still make any sense.
They don't. I'll explain. So the retro game I've been playing is Duke Nukem 3D. Good old games had a special this week, which will be over by the time that people listen to this podcast, where you could get Duke Nukem 3D for free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you should go right now.
Like right now?
Right now. It runs until tomorrow, which is Friday our time at 9:30 a.m. But if you go right now, you can pick it up for free. It comes with a bunch of extras, like the soundtrack, and has a special edition. It's the Atomic Edition, so it's got extra levels and all that stuff. And it runs on modern systems, and they ported it all over to Mac for the first time.
Huh.
Did they do any like upgrades, like with the graphics or the sound or anything?
They haven't done any upgrades like that. They did release a kind of like a news post on their website listing a bunch of mods, and one of them was a mod that actually replaces all the graphics and actually inserts proper 3D models into the game, as opposed to the kind of weird pseudo 3D sprites they use. So you should pick it up.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah,
I'm actually trying to right now. I'm having trouble forming an account, but yeah, I'm totally interested.
Yeah, it's pretty good. There's a bunch of other free games on the website as well I can pick up at any time. So, yeah.
Jason, you and your influence.
Welcome back to PC gaming, Eric.
Thank you. I just added it to my cart.
There you go. And then other than that, I got the... I know some people are opposed to emulators, but I hooked up the GameCube emulator on my home theater PC and got Time Splitters 2 running with an Xbox 360 controller.
My man.
That's pretty... Man, Time Splitters 2, that's a hell
Time
of a game
Splitters
right there.
We just found
a game all three of us really like. I can hear all the distinctive gun sound effects in my head and all those little lasers and Tommy gun. Oh, so good.
So good. The only problem I'm running into is because I built this home theater PC, it's like a very budget computer. So it's having a hard time running the game. So it runs at like 16 frames per second at times. So I'm either going to have to look into an upgrade down the road or drag my main PC into the living room. But my main PC, I think... The case alone weighs 30 pounds.
I mean, you could also buy a GameCube and just play it on there. That's what I do.
That's too easy.
Yeah. Or you can do like I do and play it on the Wii.
Yeah.
Because GameCubes are cheap right now.
I know.
Man. Apparently Tom Hall got one for like 10 bucks.
Nice. I actually have a Wii. I could just go buy Time Splitters.
You can probably find it on half.com for like $4.
Half.com?
Yeah, it's kind of like it's a step off of eBay, isn't it?
Oh.
But you don't, it's not an auction thing. It's just it's basically like an Amazon for eBay.
Crazy.
Exactly. Yep. So there, I've gotten a few good deals on there for some games.
Time Splitters 2, PlayStation 2, 94 cents.
There you go.
Sweet.
That is one unique thing about retro gaming as a hobby. The quality of the game rarely influences the price.
Yeah.
Like, as long as it was a common game, it could be the best game of all time, but you can still get it for like 50 cents, you know? It's just funny that way.
Bailey, you been playing any old games?
I hesitate because apparently this week I tried to follow your advice and play something better than Clue Clue Land.
And it didn't happen.
But, well, no, it did, but with a caveat. You see, I've been playing a couple games that I really like, but I'm not good at. I don't know if you guys have games like that in your life, but there are two of them. One I played was Pinball Quest on NES, which is a crazy unique game because it's a pinball game, but you're like following a medieval fantasy role-playing game storyline. And there's actual non-player character interactions and boss fights. And I love the game, but it's really hard, and I haven't played it enough to get good at it. So, like, I'm trying to show my wife this game because it's just such a historical oddity, and I can barely get past the first level. That's always fun. And then the other one is the NES version of Joust. I don't always like those old-school, high-score-style arcade games. But Joust is among my favorites. And I thought, oh, I'll fire it up, see what high score I can get. Yeah, I suck at it. I am so rusty at it now. Apparently, I need practice. So, Joust, I'm looking at you on the shelf right now. I'll come back to you. You know, this isn't over.
Yeah, Joust, I'm definitely in the boat with the Joust. I really do like playing it. But, yeah, it's definitely – it's one of those really frustrating games that it seems like no matter how many – how much time I put into it, I'm not any better.
Yeah, I feel like I'm missing something. Like, there must be a trick to consistently out jousting everyone and yet not being so slow as to get killed by the pterodactyls, because if I be super careful, eventually the environment will kill me. If I get too aggressive, I end up killing myself. So I struggle to find that balance. That's the story of my joust life.
Jason, I just wanted to let you know that I just downloaded Ultima 4.
Nice.
Super excited to play this.
Well, that was free as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I got a whole bunch of free games.
Yeah,
there's
a bunch of free ones on here.
Teen Agent, Beneath a Steel Sky. I don't know what that is. Ooh. Treasure Island game. But I got Ultima 4 and Ultima 2, so I'm
nice. Super,
super excited.
Welcome back to PC Gaming.
Oh, wait, there's another Ultima on here, too.
Yeah, Savage Empire.
There you go.
And Ultima Martian Dreams.
Absolutely nuts. Sorry, continue.
Oh, no, it's quite on. I'm sitting here making a mental note. Gorge on GOG.com later. Download everything. Play all the games.
I never realized how cheap games are on Half.com.
I'm telling you, it's...
What have you done? What have you gotten me onto?
Well, like,
it's a good resource.
Well, it's like, you know, I mean, Phantasy Star 3 for the Genesis is $5. I mean, granted, it's just the cart, but...
The only drawback is you're getting it used. So I know some people have hang-ups about that, and you don't always trust the condition it's in from someone else. But if you can get over that, there are some absolute steals to be found.
All right, I'm going to stop going to the stores. I'm just going to start going through
here. There's
so many Dreamcast games I'm missing.
And there's really no reason to ever leave the house.
No.
Live from your grave.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
I'm curious about this because I've been thinking about it lately and I have an answer in mind, but what is the worst game you've ever finished? Like a game that for whatever reason apparently was good enough to keep you playing until you beat it, but the whole time you're like, this kind of sucks. Does that sensation sound familiar at all?
Well, for me, the first thing that came to mind was Final Fight Guy. Now this is going to sound, I love Final Fight. The whole series, Mighty Final Fight, Final Fight 2, great games. Final Fight Guy was released on the Super NES, and basically what they did is they took out Cody, who was the quote-unquote martial artist of the game, and they put in Guy, who was originally in the arcade version. It was Cody, Guy, and Haggard. So yep. I bought Final Fight Guy because I like Final Fight, and I was like, oh, I get to play as Guy. It's the same game. It's the exact same game that I've beat 1,000 times. And I remember when I first started playing it, I'm thinking, okay, I get to play as Guy. This is kind of neat. And then I realized I never liked Guy. I never liked Cody. I always played as Haggard. So I played through the game as Haggard, but it was just, I don't know. It was one of those things where I was like, I don't know why I bought this. This is a waste of time, but it's Final Fight. So I'll play through it.
Jason, how about you?
It's hard for me to pick out a single game. There's been so many crappy games I've forced myself through.
Awesome.
Oh yeah. Great use of my time. The ones that immediately stand out are, you know, the XCOM series?
Yes.
They came out with a game. I ended up buying the XCOM collection on Steam one year. During one of their winter sales. It's like $4 for 5 games or 6 games. And the 5th game of the series is called XCOM Enforcer. That's the only one I actually beat, but it's not a strategy game. It's a third-person action shooter.
Huh. So they completely changed the whole genre of the game.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's not good. It's just
weird.
It's passable at most. Very little skill or story, or you're pretty much just running around shooting random things.
It's like the anti XCOM from the sound.
Yeah,
of it.
And right now I'm actually playing a game which has done a similar thing. I'm playing my way through Red Faction Armageddon. Came out in like 2011 or something. Have either of you played any of the Red Faction games?
I played one. Well, what was it for? It was either the PlayStation 2 or the Xbox. And I remember the thing that really intrigued me was you could destroy the environment.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm thinking. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first two games came out in 2001 and 2002, and they're first person shooters. Then 2008, they came out with the third game in the series, but they changed it to a third-person shooter, kind of Grand Theft Auto style, where you could wander around. But now everything was, you know, you could blow up buildings and all the stuff, which was fun. It wasn't a great game, but it was still fun. But now with this fourth game, Armageddon, it's still third-person, but it's not open world anymore, so you're just running down these hallways constantly.
Huh.
And it is such a painful game to play. It is buggy and story sucks, and there's literally a cutscene every 5 minutes.
Ugh.
You see that quite a bit, actually. I think I noticed it right around like 2000, 2001, where you have like a series of games, and suddenly there's another game by a completely different developer that's just blows up. It's a number one hit, sells millions and millions of copies. And then suddenly that series mimics that game because that's what's popular at the time. You know,
yeah,
regardless of how the series goes, it's just, oh, that's popular. All right, we're going to make this game like that. Let's trash everything and just start over.
I'm still trying to get over the thought of a third person XCOM, because the only ones XCOM I ever played back in the day was XCOM and XCOM Terror from the Deep.
Yeah, you play like a robot android in this one.
Oh, see, that's also strange. That, like, everything you say about it just sounds completely...
Yeah, some scientists made you, and then you go out on missions and destroy some aliens. If you get a chance, you can pick it up on Steam.
Well, if we follow Hunter's theory, like, what third-person action shooter was so popular that even XCOM would change so drastically?
I honestly don't know.
It's either that, or maybe it was supposed to be a completely different game, and then they realized it wasn't going to do anything, so they slapped XCOM on it.
That happens too. Yeah.
Game developers are lame.
Yeah.
And they're lazy.
They have some weird ideas.
They did that with Star Fox as well, with that Star Fox Assault.
Yeah, and Star Fox Adventure.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yep.
That was supposed to be a different game. What was that?
That was like a Dinosaur Planet.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. But
yeah, that's right.
Well, see, even on top of that, sometimes you get lucky, whereas in like one of the Resident Evil games that Capcom was working on was changed so dramatically, it ended up being Devil May Cry. Devil May Cry is a great game. Well, at least the first one's a great game.
And then sometimes when you have that big genre departure, I'm a fan of the Final Fantasy Tactics games, and that was a big separation from traditional Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy Tactics.
Sometimes it works out, I guess.
Yeah. That was actually the first Final Fantasy game I played.
Oh, nice.
Well, heck, you could go back even farther with Zelda, too. I mean...
Yeah.
It's true. Controversial pick there, but true.
Or that Mario first-person shooter.
What?
I made that up.
Oh, okay. There was a Mega Man first-person shooter.
Yeah.
Man, you guys make my answer that I had in mind sound kind of silly now. It's pretty simple. I was just thinking of Quest 64.
Yeah, that's a good one.
AKA the most generic RPG of all time.
I had such high hopes for it, too.
Yeah, because there weren't really many RPGs on the Nintendo 64 to begin with. Like, if you like the genre, you had to buy it. So, if anyone's looking for a review of it, I recommend the one Pro Jared did. You can find him at youtube.com/DMJared. He does a perfect summary of what makes the game so watered down and just oddly paced. And I played it from beginning to end, and it's just not an experience that affects you. Yeah.
See, to me, that's one of those games that had a lot of good things going for it, and then they just kind of misstep. Like, there's so much walking around where there's no backgrounds and no textures and nothing. It's just, you know, just shapes and colors.
Yeah, that's weird.
And
just
totally forgot what I was going to say.
Sorry. Well, I'll never forget. There's one area. It's supposed to be your typical cave, but it's just a tunnel. And if your character is, let's say, 5 feet tall, you literally walk forward for like 2.5 miles without a change of scenery, and there's random encounters. So you spend over an hour just marching forward, fighting enemies every couple minutes. I mean, it's so obnoxious, but...
That sounds awful.
I guess the fact that the game is called Quest 64 should have been my first clue as to how uninspired it was.
I also enjoyed how 90% of the people that you talk to have nothing important to say.
Not at all. Nope. There's one person in every town you have to talk to. Other than that person, all of the dialogue, none of it is clever, none of it is interesting. It's the most bland. Ugh.
Good pick, though, Bailey. That's a good
pick.
Incoming transmission.
Hey, guys, guess what?
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 We got a listener email.
What? Holy crap.
I know, right? Longtime listener goes by Big Joe 91 on the site when he leaves comments. He's a frequent commenter. He's a fan of the podcast. He'll even tweet to articles. We don't even ask him to do it. He's just an excellent ally for One More Castle. Apparently, his real name is Jonathan. So that's good to know. And he has a two-part question for us.
All right.
I think I'll take a swing at the first question from an editor-in-chief administrative standpoint. And you two can chime in all you'd like. But the second question, I think, will be a little more interesting overall. But he says, and I begin quoting, "Hello, guys. In the guest episode's comments, episode 11, there was talk of a sweater saying, 'I did one more podcastle, and all I got was my manliness question.' Is there any chance we would see that on the future One More Castle store? For those who don't know, episode 11 was a great episode, and we have many comments on episode 11's page on the website, and a few of them refer to this theoretical sweater. It started when some people were questioning the manliness of the episode, and I said, oh, don't worry, when the regular hosts get back, the manliness of One More Castle will be intact. And Masochist, the musical guest, actually chimed in and said, 'Jason, I would like a sweater with tons of cute kitties on it, if possible. Do you take rupees?' To which Jason said, 'Yep, just deposit them into my Kokiri bank account.' But in terms of it actually being a reality to make a One More Castle sweater, I would say, yeah, you know you like it. Myself and Andrew Carrero, the technical editor, have always had a philosophy for One More Castle that we love feedback and we want to heed it. We want to take it seriously. So, Jonathan, if there turns out to be real demand for a cat-themed sweater with the 1MC logo, we'll find a way to make it happen. If there really is a desire out there for that kind of thing, we'll see what we can do. So you heard it first here, listeners. If there's something you want to see on the site or in a theoretical store, let us know and we'll see what we can do.
I want one that says lawnmowers on it.
I'd buy it. And then Jonathan goes on to say, speaking of which, do you guys have any idea related to the podcast of retro gaming moments in general that should be made into apparels? Thanks, Big Joe 91. Well, lawnmowers are obvious. Duh.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of them that I'm sure have already been made. You know, like the All Your Base Are Belong to Us. I'm sure there's a t-shirt out there with that on it. I got a t-shirt. It's a Zelda t-shirt that says, don't make me go Zelda on you. And there's like the Master Sword and the hammer and all the different items from the first Legend of Zelda on it. Can't really think of anything offhand that I thought would have been. Maybe the Shaq Fu Come At Me Bra. Wouldn't mind having a t-shirt that said that on there.
Oh, the cover art would be perfect for that. That'd be amazing. Oh, yeah.
Or maybe something funny from like Street Fighter 2, like at the kind of like that crappy cutscene in between each battle when you blow the crap out of somebody. Those got some funny sayings on it. I can't think of anything in particular, but
yeah, I think I'm a big fan of just having a punchline underneath a piece of retro gaming iconography. So for example, maybe like just a black and white schematic of the original NES controller. And then underneath it would say, gamers do it with their thumbs.
Wow.
Yep. Something like that. Or maybe an out of context quote, like don't have any kind of logo or any clue where it's from, but just have the shirt in white text on a black background in an 8-bit font say, congratulations, you have completed a great game and proved the justice of our culture. Now go and rest our heroes.
How about Double Dragon 3 during one of the
Jimmy
cuts.
And Bimmy Lee?
Yes!
Yes! Just have it say like Bimmy Lee. That's all it had to say.
And then like his three, crappy photo on it?
Yeah, have like three brothers and just have them labeled Billy, Jimmy, Bimmy. That'd be funny. Yeah, there's countless ideas out there. You really just have to look at some of the funnier retro games and blatantly rip them off, essentially, now that I put it that way. But
actually, I wouldn't mind a One More Castle t-shirt, like a red t-shirt with the white logo on it. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
It is a pretty classy logo.
It is.
Andrew made.
Classy. Andrew's classy.
So classy. Yep.
Classy. Classy.
I think we got some work to do, guys. I don't know about you, but
yeah. Rocketpants.com, right. The official merchandise store.
We just figured it out. Rocket-pants.com, the future home of the One More Castle website storefront.
Look at Jason, boom. The big brain on Jason.
Dang, good work, sir.
Thank you.
All right, that's our homework assignment. Come up with t-shirt ideas that will sell like hotcakes.
Done.
Okay. So, yeah, Jonathan, thank you so much for emailing us, and that was a great question. And I'd like to encourage any other listeners, please email us, because obviously we will actually talk about it and take your questions seriously. That email address is podcast@onemorecastle.com. Any final thoughts on t-shirt ideas, fellas?
I want a picture of the truck from Cross Country Canada.
With a hitchhiker standing
by. Yeah, of course. Ready to mug you.
Ready to mug you. I'm going to mug you.
I think we should also have a rocket pants pair of pants.
Oh, we should.
Like sweatpants with like rocket boosters on the butt or something. That would be awesome. Maybe awesome is not the right word, but.
No, it's
classy. Classy is the right word.
There you go. There you go.
Classy. Oh, putting the assy in classy. Let's take a musical break.
Retro Productions.
And welcome back. That was Jam Session by GF Retro, some nifty little progressive electronica for you, if you can handle it. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for, the Retro Showdown.
Retro Showdown!
For those who don't know, this is the part of the show where each of us has chosen a secret retro game. We will introduce it individually, and then, in a free-for-all session, just argue about whose game is the best. But the best part is that you, the listener, get to vote for your favorite choice on the podcast page, hopefully influenced by our arguments. And the winner from two episodes ago, on episode 12, was... me, with Micro Machines on the Game Boy, got more votes than either Twisted Metal 2 or Boogeyman, a pick and flick adventure. So, neener neener, ha ha ha, suckers.
Whatever.
That is the extent of my gloating. There it is.
Whatever.
I honestly didn't expect to win that one, I'll be really honest. I thought Twisted Metal 2 or Boogeyman would surely beat out the Game Boy iteration of Micro Machines, but... I guess my fans came through. Thanks, guys.
Damn you, nostalgia.
Your fans.
We all have our fans, right? Right?
I don't think anybody's really a fan of me.
I'm a fan of you.
Yeah, I really dig your taste, Hunter. You're always bringing up these semi-obscure classic 16-bit era games. I really appreciate it.
Well, you all are welcome.
Jason, you got 2 minutes on the clock for me?
Oh, I've got 2 minutes.
All right, ready when you are.
All right, you may begin.
I'm going to reach back to 1995, and you may not know this, but although my online persona goes by Nintendo Legend in my branding, I've owned non-Nintendo systems too. In fact, I was very fond of my Sega Genesis, and one of my favorite games on it was a very 1990s gem called Comics Zone. And not even spelled C-O-M-I-C-S. Oh, no, it was C-O-M-I-X, Comic Zone. Comic Zone follows our protagonist, Sketch Turner, a comic book artist, and his pet rat, Roadkill, as they get stuck inside one of his comic books, where the gameplay is kind of like a side-scrolling beat-em-up, but with a big twist. Because it takes place in a comic book, every level is a page from that comic, and you're fighting from panel to panel. It's a very unique way to progress through the levels, and it gives the whole game a distinctive comic book-like presentation. Very enjoyable. And beyond just having a unique visual appeal, the gameplay was actually really well done, too. Sketch has a variety of fighting moves he uses to dispose of mutant enemies, from jump kicks to spin kicks and rapid punches, and using items like dynamite and grenades and drinking the occasional iced tea to recover his health. And with its rockin' soundtrack, some excellent boss fights, and even some puzzles to solve, Comic Zone is just an excellent game and a worthy challenge for any retro gamer.
All right. Hunter, are you ready?
I am ready.
You may begin.
Taking a page out of Bailey's book... my pick for this week's showdown is Cabal, a 1988 release for the NES. In Cabal, the player controls an unnamed commando set to destroy every single thing in its path. Literally, you kill enemy troops, buildings, tanks, helicopters, fighter jets, jeeps, walls, towers, and submarines. The game starts off the player in cover, and then the onslaught begins. This is the definition of an army of one. The enemies are numerous, the ammo for your gun is limitless, and the fun is action-packed. As you progress through the game, you pick up power-ups such as extra grenades, weapon upgrades, and extra lives. There are 5 stages, 4 screens per stage, and a 2-player mode, and more booms and explosions than you can shake a stick at. The controls are innovative for the NES, especially for being an early release in the console's history. The graphics are bright and colorful, and you feel a real sense of accomplishment once you've completed a screen. A super fun game and your only choice for this week's Retro Showdown.
All right, I guess I'll begin. For this week's Retro Showdown, I chose the 1992 side-scrolling beat-em-up classic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time. Based on the popular comic book series and animated series, you take control of Leonardo, Donatello, Michelangelo, and Raphael as you both battle through multiple stages, defeating Shredder's many, many Android creations. The game features an excellent soundtrack, actually composed by the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle animated series composer, and improves upon the original arcade game by introducing new graphics, levels, and snappier responses. Overall, it's a great game, and it should be your choice for this week's Retro Showdown.
Wow.
Yeah.
You both picked Nintendo games, and I did not.
How weird is that?
That is weird.
I think it's even stranger that Jason picked a console game.
I did. I decided to mix it up.
And it's a side-scrolling beat-em-up.
A side-scrolling beat-em-up.
Do you even own a Super NES?
No. Actually, I never did. I actually used to go over to this guy's house and play his Super NES just to play this game. In fact, it may have been the only reason I was his friend at the time.
Well, that's terrible. You're a terrible person.
Terrible. I was a terrible five-year-old.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's great, and you should be admired for it.
Thank you.
Wow, you both are terrible.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, I have to ask with Cabal. Cabal?
Cabal, yeah.
Cabal.
Cabal?
Cable?
Cable?
Ah, Cable.
Ball?
Anyway, with Cabal.
Cabal?
It seems to me, what was that army game you brought?
General Chaos?
Yes, General Chaos. Is this another game where it's trying to emulate a mouse with the Super Nintendo controller?
Not technically, no. It's just I will say that in General Chaos, yes, they were trying to emulate a mouse. This, it's more of a target than anything.
Okay. Could you use the zapper?
No.
Sounds horrible.
It's a lot of fun.
So it's an arcade port that doesn't let you use the zapper, and it's a shooting gallery game.
Right.
But you can't use the zapper?
These are all great things. Yeah, you're right.
That sounds horrible.
No, it's a lot of fun. When playing this game, this is what, in my opinion, this is what Rambo should have been. Because this is the whole, army of one. Rambo for the NES was terrible. Cabal was, that's the game to play. That's the army of one.
But why the NES release?
What do you mean?
Why specifically the NES release?
Because that's the one I have.
It's pretty much the definitive release that is most commonly known by retro gamers.
Yeah, that's... I could have picked the Western spinoff,
Blood Brothers.
Yeah, you want me to... Come on.
No, I was just going to say, there's the MS-DOS version, the Spectrum, the Atari ST, the Amiga.
None of those words make any sense to me.
They all have mice.
Hunter.
Bailey.
Jason.
Three things.
Sorry, continue.
Number one, I have checked the audio on dictionary.com. Apparently, it's pronounced Cabal.
Oh, really?
Well, apparently.
Oh, whatever. I'm American. I can say whatever I want.
It's Cabal.
Number two, do you know what company published Cabal?
Rare. It was developed by Rare.
They were the developer. Do you know what company published Cabal?
Mattel?
Nope.
Milton Bradley.
Oh, I was close. Okay.
You were close, but I seem to remember catching a lot of crap from you when I picked a Milton Bradley game.
Your game was developed by Milton Bradley. My game's developed by Rare. Just because Milton Bradley gives another company money to make a game, that doesn't mean anything. They don't have any influence. This isn't the movie business.
Number three, Cabal is one of those rare 8-bit games within the genre of a single screen with a character at the bottom who's participating in zapper-like action without using a zapper as he fires at enemies, presumably in the background.
Yes.
Do you know what company did it better than Rare and Milton Bradley?
No.
Beam Software and LJN when they released The Punisher.
Did you really just say LJN was better?
LJN did it better when they released The Punisher. The Punisher is my favorite LJN game. It's in that obscure little genre that Cabal aspires to be, and yet The Punisher is better. It actually scrolls back and forth. There's more weapons variety. There's more choice in how you progress through the game. It is a superior title by LJN. Just wanted to throw
that
out.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Okay, well, we're not talking about the Punisher. We're talking about Cabal.
It's a two-bit Punisher.
I'm using a comparison.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, sure, okay. I think, Bailey, I mean, saying any game by LJN is good. I think I'm going to be sick.
LJN put out some terrible games. But that's all the more reason why you should be ashamed that you picked a game that was worse than one of LJN's.
No. In the same no.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
No. All right. So let's talk about Comic Zone.
Bring it on.
Or, you know, a ripoff of Cool World.
Not at all.
Really?
No.
It's about a guy going into a comic book? That's Cool World. That's what happens in
Cool
World.
Have you played the Cool World video games, though?
Oh, yeah, I have.
Yeah, they're completely different. They don't take place on comic book panels. They're actually not even usually beat-em-ups. See, when I made the comparison, I compared at least within the same genre. I admit, while Cool World may have some narrative similarity, the gameplay is much different.
So you're telling me that gameplay is not as important as storytelling? Because I disagree.
I'm saying, regardless of importance, if you're going to hinge your comparison on gameplay, you should at least make sure the gameplay is similar.
See, I don't know. I think that goes hand in hand. I think gameplay and narrative go hand in hand. I think
they do. I was just using some weasel words because you weren't even trying to compare their gameplay at all. That was my point.
Weasel words. But the other thing that really gets me about Sketch Turner, is that right? Sketch?
Yep, Sketch Turner. That's his name.
They named him Sketch.
Well, came out in 1995, which was the whole grunge era of music, you know, like Nirvana, yep. Pearl Jam, yeah. Soundgarden. He's the epitome of a grunge kind of person. Like, he's got the cutoff jeans and he's wearing the ponytail and the fingerless gloves. Like, that's what was popular at the time.
Do you have a problem with that?
No, I just think it's just what we were talking about earlier. You know, you go with whatever's popular at the time because you think more people are going to purchase your product because it relates to what's going on in the present.
So it's a bit of a sellout. That's what you're saying.
Well, that's actually a great, that's a great word for it, Jason.
While I will give you that it's definitely a sellout in terms of the cultural thermometer of the area, I mean, it's the most 1990s game ever. It's so 1990s. But the gameplay is super innovative. It's truly original. It's wonderful. And it's just high quality. It's so
gameplay
good.
Is original?
It's a beat-em-up.
Yeah.
It's a
beat-em-up.
What's original about a beat-em-up?
There's a few things. Number one, the whole progression through comic panels. You literally interact. Yeah, it is. It does incorporate it into the actual gameplay because it affects the environment. It affects what you can interact with in your environment. For instance, you can actually tear a part of the page off and throw it as a paper airplane. There are points in the game when you can choose one of two different paths to travel, like depending on which panel you want to go to. It truly does influence the gameplay, I promise. And in terms of other gameplay innovations it has kind of a neat little item inventory management system where you can carry up to three at a time and cycle through them or instantly use them if you had the six button controller. It's just a great game, guys. It's that simple. It's a very good game.
Comic Zone,
absolutely. I will defend it.
Jason, have you ever played Comic Zone?
I have.
How far did you get? Because it's no continues. No lives.
It's like you go, you die, you start again.
It's one and done.
Yeah.
So how far have you really gotten in this game?
Me?
Just either.
I've beaten it.
Not using the game genie.
Not using the game genie. Not even using. There is a cheat code you can enter that gives you unlimited health. But here's the brilliance of the game. The final boss fight, even if you're invincible, there's a time limit because the love interest is slowly drowning in this vat that's being slowly filled with liquid. So you have to beat the boss before she drowns. So even if you use the game genie or you use the built-in cheat code, you still have to be good at the game in order to get the good ending. It's brilliant. It's so good.
That ending sounds a lot like the ending to Cool World.
So this game's a remake of Cool World? Is that what I understand?
If you believe everything Eric Hunter says, yes.
As you should.
There we go.
As you should.
Now my question is, why would you go and play Comic Zone, a game based on no real comic property, when you could
because
go
play... Because it's original.
Yeah, but you could go play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time, and relive all the fabulous adventures that your favorite Ninja Turtles embark on.
Because I played it twice already. I played it with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3... What is it? Something in Manhattan?
The Manhattan Project. One of my favorite all-time games.
It's the exact same game. They've done nothing. Okay, I'll give this to Bailey. At least Comic Zone does take some new ideas to put into their game. Your game is the same game they've been making for 16 years.
And it's brilliant.
The deep, dark secret behind Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4, Turtles in Time, and I'm totally okay with this going on public record, it is one of the most overrated console games of all time.
No.
Explain, no. Bailey.
Explain.
Please explain.
I will gladly explain because I loved Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade game, and Turtles 3, the Manhattan Project, both on NES. I've beaten them several times. I probably, considering how repetitive they are, it's probably embarrassing how many times I played through them as a kid, just because I played them over and over. And in the 16-bit era, everyone is talking about these awesome 16-bit sequels, and they're bigger and they're better and they're awesome. And if you're someone like me who's played Turtles 3 so many times, and you play Turtles 4, you discover that not only is it shameful how little it innovates, but it's also a much shorter game and with a lot less challenge. It's an easy, watered-down Turtles beat-em-up experience.
I disagree.
Well, you're wrong. I'm sorry you can't handle the truth bomb I just dropped on your brain head, but there it is.
It's taking one of the most popular properties of the time, putting it on the most popular console of the time, and doing so in a way that lets you experience new adventures with these characters. You literally get to go through time.
Literally.
How awesome is that?
Travel.
Literally.
Yeah. Hey, Hunter.
You in your living room travel through time as if your house was a massive DeLorean.
Hey, Hunter.
Yes.
Can you think of any licensed games based on a popular media property that may not have been the best games?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm guessing, Jason, you may not want to hinge your argument on that point, because a licensed game in and of itself guarantees nothing. There have been a lot of
your game's the remake.
E.T. was amazing.
We'll talk about E.T. another time. But no, my game was not a remake, darn it.
Sure seems like one.
Comic Zone is one of those games where they had a good idea and then they fell short, either because they ran out of time or maybe they ran out of money. Or whatever the case may be, but the game has all these great aspects to it, but then it feels rushed.
How do you feel that way? That's interesting to me. How does it feel rushed or incomplete to you?
I mean, the story alone. The dialogue is...
Stilted?
The dialogue is stilted. Thank you, Jason.
Bifurcated books?
I mean,
the dialogue isn't that bad.
It takes a genre that has been done before. It takes a narrative that has been done before. To me, okay, here's how I equate Comic Zone. To me, Comic Zone is one of those games like you take a game that everybody likes, like Streets of Rage, and then you try to do something different with it, but it's still the same game as every other game you played. Like, it would be like taking Rampage and saying, okay, well, you're not just blowing up buildings anymore. Now you're in space. Or you're destroying planets. Something like that. Like, it just seems one of those ideas. They sat down. They were like, okay, I got an idea for a game. You're in a comic book. Everything's kind of animated. It's a beat 'em up. Okay, what else you got? That's it. So let's just use filler.
On top of that, it's only 6 levels long.
What?
Okay.
There's only 6 levels.
That's it?
That's it.
Mine's got 20 levels.
They had to make it hard so you didn't realize that you just got ripped off $60.
That's why there's only the you only get the one life with no continues.
Because you can literally beat the game in a sitting.
God, I can think of 1,000 games that do that. Rather than making a good game that's, you know, long and challenging, they make it really hard because it's really short. Awesome.
Okay, I have a couple of defenses here. Number one, my game is longer than either of your guys' games. If you were to sit down and actually play through and beat each of the three games we've selected, mine would take you the longest.
Are we talking in terms of levels or in terms of you dying constantly?
Because that's debatable.
No, you don't have to die at all. In my game, you can play through, never die, and it is a meaty challenge. It is a long haul of a game. It takes over a half hour to beat. Turtles 4, I think I can beat in 20 minutes.
Did you just say it takes half an hour to beat?
Well, once you master it.
Are you walking really slow? It's only 5 levels.
No, they're big levels, man. They're good, well-designed levels with puzzles and challenges and enemies and boss fights and good stuff. Also, if I can defend myself against something that you guys were talking about a few minutes ago by now. Hunter, I hear you when you're comparing Comic Zone to Streets of Rage or Cool World. And I know on the One More Podcastle, it's a favorite tactic of all of us to just compare games to another game. But can you really name one specific mechanic? I challenge you. Just one specific thing in Comic Zone that honestly feels rushed or incomplete to you?
The dialogue. I think the dialogue feels rushed. Like, it's just really boring and pointless. Yeah, like, there's... Because the first... what are they called? Frames, I guess?
Yeah, I guess so.
Panel,
Panel, okay. Yeah, sorry, panel. Like, the first panel, you're talking to that chick.
Yep.
It's the dialogue's terrible. Like, it's so wooden. Like, I feel like I'm watching Star Wars. Ooh. That's how wooden the dialogue is.
Do you know why it feels rushed?
Because it is? Because
it's 6 levels long?
Yeah, because it is?
They're long levels. The amount of levels has no relevance on length. They're long levels. But the point is, it's that opening dialogue feels rushed because the characters in the story are rushed. She's telling him to hurry up.
It's literally a collection of bad 90s one-liners.
Faux pas?
It is very 90s. I'll give
Come
you guys
here,
that.
Bro.
You can criticize that.
Yeah.
Wow. Intense.
Bailey, I'll give you this. About your game. Apparently they released a soundtrack with it.
It's got a rocking soundtrack.
That's pretty cool. I think that's a neat idea. I mean, granted, it's only 6 tracks long, but that's a pretty cool idea.
And as long as we're comparing ideas that have been done before, I mean, the Ninja Turtles traveling through time. Both of those ideas had seen a dozen iterations already before Turtles 4 ever came along.
I think the thing that really upsets me about Turtles 4 is the ending when you fight Super Shredder. Why? Why do you fight
again?
Super Shredder? Well, the thing is that in my opinion anyway, the games have nothing to do with the movies. Super Shredder came from the movies, from Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze. Why would you even put that in there? Like, it's got nothing to do with it. It's like a cop-out, basically.
Yeah, especially when you've already killed Shredder in Turtles 2 and Super Shredder in Turtles 3.
Whatever happened to Krang? Do you ever fight Krang?
Oh, yeah.
It's Krang.
That's another thing, too. I just remembered with Turtles in Time. It's really based off of the cartoon, which is in no comparison to the comic book.
Oh, no. The comics are extremely violent.
That's awesome.
I agree.
AKA
that's awesome.
Better.
Uber better.
Well, as long as we all agree on that, then that's cool. So where was I? Your game sucks.
No, your game sucks.
No, your game sucks.
Oh,
your
God.
Game sucks more.
So is Comic Zone, does it use the 3-button gamepad or the 6-button gamepad?
Either. If you use a 3-button, it has a different configuration to adjust for it. But the 6-button has the superior experience, but it actually designed for either.
So it couldn't even decide on a control scheme. That's amazing.
No. They adjusted because Sega is the one who made both of them available. They did the players a service by making sure that both were accounted for.
So you don't get a full game play experience if you don't buy a controller?
No. You do, but it's different. The inventory system I mentioned, you can carry three items. If you have a three-button controller, you have to use one of the buttons to cycle through them before you pick one. If you have a six-button controller, you can just hit X, Y, or Z to use one of the items for the corresponding slot.
Can I use the Power Glove?
Not for Comic Zone.
Terrible game. You can use the Power Glove for my game.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I agree.
I'll give you that so over bad. His.
All right, whatever. Fine.
What's the deal with the rat? What's the deal with the rat?
Yeah, what's with the rat?
So his name is Roadkill, and he can help.
So 90s.
So 90s.
Good God.
But no, listen, he can help you find hidden items, he can flip switches, and he can attack enemies. He's so cool.
Can he die?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he comes back, but yeah, he can get knocked off screen.
Wait.
Because you don't.
So you base, can, yeah. It's like a crutch. They've included.
Well, no, he's not like super powerful. Like his attacks are very weak, but he's the most useful thing he does is find hidden items.
Well, it's only six levels like long. They got to make the game easier, right?
Yeah. Good.
You guys suck at math. That's all I'm gonna say.
Math is hard. I will admit, math is hard.
Turtles 4 is so overrated.
It's so good.
God, you're going to get so much hate for that.
Yeah, you're going to get so much hate.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Turtles 2 and 3 for the NES are better games, especially because you can't even play 4-player on Turtles in Time, can you?
Yeah, you can.
No, that's not right, is it?
Up to 4 players. Oh, no, 2 players in the Super Nintendo version.
Ah!
I apologize.
Typical Canadian.
That's right, you apologize.
Typical.
Whenever Hunter can't do math, should he say typical American?
Yes. Hey, man, public schools. Woo! What's that?
Speaking of what? Huh? I'm
trying to remember that level in Turtles in Time where you have to throw the foot soldiers at the screen.
Yes, that was their way of using the Mode 7 chip, if I remember right, is letting you throw foot.
Talk
screen.
About the crappiest way to use a great piece of technology.
Thank you. Amen. I've been trying to say that for years.
I mean, I can say that the concept is a good idea because I think, you know, throwing characters at a screen, that's pretty cool. But the way that it was set up, since it's so pixelated when it gets to the top of the screen, just looks like a big blob of colors.
Yep. Yep.
And Bebop and Rocksteady weren't in the game either. Oh, yeah, they were. Shit. Never mind.
They were.
But they were like in time.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Nah. That's awesome. It's amazing.
But they didn't. That's the thing. The Turtles went back in time.
Yeah.
None of the enemies did. Like Shredder.
Sure they did.
What? Why?
I don't know.
That's not what you do. You just throw them back in time. And then say, well,
yeah, I mean,
there's no way they're coming back. No, let's send everybody else. Let's send Bebop. Let's send Rocksteady. Yeah, let's send them all back there. That's a great idea.
It's a fantastic idea.
Terrible.
You guys make fun of my game's plot, but at least it had a plot. Jason's is just random. It's like they threw darts at a phone book to determine the storyline.
That doesn't make any sense.
No.
Typical American.
I think we have a name for the episode.
Hey, there it is. Episode title. Typical American.
Typical American.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, and then they made that crappy remake where it was all cel-shaded. Ugh.
Yeah. All right, guys. Closing arguments. Hunter, why should listeners vote for your game?
I think that listeners should vote for my game because it's fun. You get to blow everything up. And that's all you need. You just need to blow everything up. That's all that matters.
All right. Well, there you have it. Jason, why should listeners vote for your game in the Retro Showdown?
Because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. What more do you need? It's all about eating pizza and saying cowabunga, dude.
Typical American.
That's such it. A typical American.
Oh, well, listeners, I would suggest you vote for my game because it's actually a really good game. I mean, it's superior in gameplay, appearance, innovation, and soundtrack. Having said that, I'd like to give some shout-outs. Ben Landis for the music he lets us use for the intro and the outro. The interlude artist, GF Retro, for your track Jam Session. You guys can actually download that on the podcast page, by the way. And let's see. Let's do a random Twitter follower. I'm going to blatantly steal that idea from Jason. Assuming Twitter
American.
Assuming it'll load for me. All right, we're going to go with... Let's go with Tin Pot Gamer. Yep, just like it sounds. He is at Tin Pot Gamer on Twitter. I've actually talked to him back and forth on Twitter for a while now. He was probably one of the first retro gamers I met on Twitter. So, yeah, shout out to you. Hunter, Jason, you two have any shout outs you want to get out of the way?
Let me see. I'd like to do a shout out to at Canada Post Cares.
What is that?
It's the public relations Twitter account for Canada Post, our national postage system.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. and you can follow me on Twitter at Jason Lamb and see why I'm giving a shout out to them.
Oh, there you go.
Incentive.
Intrigue, yeah. Hunter, how about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Hunter. My website is ericmhunter.net. And I want to give a shout out to Paul Potvin. Is that how you say his last name?
I believe so.
Potvin? Paul? Yes. I feel bad now. Anyway, he did an article on One More Castle, The Fair Shake, The Wizards and Warriors. Huge fan of the game. I think he did a really good write-up. And also, he mentioned the Star Wars kit. So, I mean, that's a check plus all the way.
Yeah, he does great work, and that's a worthy shout-out. I like that series. We might have to talk about that in a future episode.
Well, the first one's good. The other two were terrible.
No. The second one's really good.
Oh, you would think so. God, it's gross.
The third one's bad, but the second one is really good.
Just the fact that the second one has Fabio on the cover is done. It's over.
No, that's funny, but has nothing to do with the game. Come on.
Ugh.
Be a little fair. Come on. All right, if even after that comment you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Nintendo_legend. My blog, currently a little neglected because December's crazy for me, is nintendolegend.com. And last but not least, listeners, remember, you are a bad enough dude to rescue the president. See you next week.